Okay, so the pressure's on, the internet is down, and I'm the only entertainment you've got. I did leave the wireless on, though, so if the internet comes up, I'm sure you'll see a signal up here. So first I wanted to say what an honor and a pleasure it is to be here to have the opportunity to talk at Joe's celebration. I'm particularly pleased to be chosen as one of the young people who benefited from Joe's guidance in my career. Here's the man of the hour up here. We've heard a lot about biking in the past day or so, but it was also hinted in the video yesterday that Joe is a man of many sports. And I know when I first came, or I met him here at KITP, that one of the things that really impressed me is here's a guy who lives in Southern California, but he plays hockey. What's cooler than that? And so I know from experience living in Southern California for quite a while that it's really hard to get the hockey news down here. And so I did want to take this opportunity to update you on a couple of recent scores that you may have missed. Okay, well, we'll come back to hockey later, maybe. I'm supposed to talk about physics. So I wanted to tell you about some work that I've been doing with a bunch of smart people here. There's Matt, who many of you know, and then a bunch of students back at Perimeter. Jason's actually a Psi student, and he'll be here next year, so maybe he'll be Joe's next student. So let's start. Here's an idea. So here's the formula known as the Bekenstein-Hawking formula, and we're all used to applying that to evaluating the entropy of a black hole. But the suggestion here is that maybe it has broader applicability than that. Maybe we can think of that formula as being applied to any region of space-time and telling us about the entanglement of the degrees of freedom inside and outside of that region. And the proposal starts up there with, in a theory of quantum gravity. So, well, here's a theory of quantum gravity. I'm told, or I've heard, that there are alternate approaches to quantum gravity. But this is Joe's party, and so we won't mention that today. We'll stick to this one. And the simple question I'm going to ask is, are there any observables, in particular boundary observables in this theory, that correspond to evaluating the Bekenstein-Hawking formula on various bulk surfaces in the interior? And of course, the answer is yes. You're all wondering. You know, there's what ruined, or Shinsei and Tadashi taught us many years ago, that we want to evaluate the entanglement entropy for various regions in the boundary of our ADS space, that corresponds to evaluating this well-known formula on various extremal surfaces in the interior. And as Juan was emphasizing yesterday, here what we're doing is we're applying that formula to very unusual or unconventional boundaries. We're not talking about black holes or horizons or even the boundaries of some causal domain. Well, that certainly indicates then that this formula has some kind of broader applicability than the black holes or the horizons that we're used to thinking about. But are there more examples? And here, in fact, if we dig through the literature, there are some speculations that evaluating this formula on various different kinds of surfaces tell us about the entanglement in the boundary theory. And so one example here is causal holographic information by Veronica and Mukund. And I won't say more about it now. It may come up later if I have time. There's also an intriguing idea by Vijay and friends. What they were thinking about was entanglement not in position space, but entanglement in momentum space. And they were working with various examples, but in the context of holography, what they thought, or what they proposed, was that if I thought about a surface, say, at a fixed radius, and I evaluated this formula, I'm getting an entropy. What is that describing? Well, they suggested that it describes the entanglement between degrees of freedom at high scales and low scales in the boundary theory. That was an interesting proposal, but it's something that really has, been made more quantitative, again, by Vijay and friends down here. And so that's really going to be the focus of my talk today, this idea of holographic space-time. And I really think this is an interesting paper, and that's the only archive number that you're going to see in this talk, because I encourage you all to go and read that paper, because as I tell this story, you will not know anything about what they said in their version of the story. So I'm going to back up, and I'm going to ask a central idea in the discussion here is an idea called strong subadditivity. And so it's a relation or an inequality that's satisfied by entanglement entropies when I've got various systems, or I'm considering various components of a system. In particular, in quantum field theory, we usually think about overlapping regions. And there's an interesting, or rather simple, proof that the Ryu-Takinagi proposal in holography satisfies this inequality. And so here's a cartoon of the boundary of ADS space. I've got two regions that are overlapping. And then in the bulk, I have these extremal surfaces. This one evaluates the entanglement entropy of region 1. This one evaluates the entanglement entropy of region 2. In the other side of the inequality, I have the intersection and the union. And so here are the extremal surfaces associated with those regions. How do I prove that those, or the areas up there, are less than the sum of the areas down here? Well, we simply reorganize how we do the accounting here. We add up this part of the area to that part, and this part of the area to that part. Then if I compare, say, the red curve, it's in the universe, or it's in the class of surfaces that I would have extremized over to determine the entanglement entropy for the union. But this is the extremal surface, so I know this has more area than that one. And similarly, we can take the yellow curve and we can compare it to the extremal surface for the intersection. And so what that tells us then is that, well, this inequality in the holographic context is satisfied. I also want to mention, though, that this is all done in a static situation. And Aaron at the back of the room here worked much harder to establish a similar, to establish the same inequality in a dynamical setting in holography. Okay, so what can I do with that? Well, we're going to go back to the idea of holography. There, what I'm thinking about is ADS3 in global coordinates. So this is a Cauchy slice through ADS3. Here are my two boundary intervals. And I'm just going to rewrite strong subadditivity in this way. I'm going to put the entanglement entropy for the intersection on this side. And so here I've got the entanglement entropy for the union. To make life easier, I'm going to introduce some notation. We're going to see quantities or expressions like this where I have entanglement entropies of intervals and then subtracting entanglement entropies of intersections. They're going to be finite sums. They're going to be infinite sums. Eventually, they're going to be integrals. So I want to name that rather than saying blah, 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 blah. I'm just going to call that combination the differential entropy. And so what this says is entanglement entropy for the union is less than or equal to the differential entropy. Now, just as an observation, I can also see that the differential entropy bounds another quantity, namely the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy evaluated on this red curve, which I'll call the outer envelope. It's the boundary of the union of all of the regions associated with those intervals on the in the boundary there. So that's just a curiosity. But it'll be a central player in how I'm going to describe this. One of the observations is that I've written this as a function of the two intervals separately, not the union, because certainly if I change the partition there of the boundary region without changing the union, I'm changing the details of that outer envelope or of that red curve. Now we're going to jump ahead. And rather than thinking about some finite region or small region on the boundary, I'm going to tile the entire boundary of my ADS space. And so here I have 8 different intervals. that cover the entire space. I can play the same strong subadditivity game, but apply it repeatedly in this case. And what I'll find is that strong subadditivity says that the entanglement entropy for the sum of all of the intervals, i.e. the entire boundary, is equal to this differential entropy constructed from the individual or the partition of the boundary. Now, if I'm talking about pure ADS space, I'm talking about the vacuum of the CFT, or alternatively, if I'm talking about any pure state of the CFT, then in fact I know that this side is zero. I see the whole state, it's a pure state, there is no entanglement left over. On the holographic side, the reason or the place that zero comes from is that I'm looking for an extremal surface that's homologous to the entire boundary. And so when I try and extremize, the surfaces all just shrink down to zero size, and so the area is zero. And so what I get here from strong subadditivity is that this differential entropy is a positive quantity. I can play the same game, however, of repeatedly applying various inequalities to consider this outer envelope, which now becomes a closed curve in the interior of my ADS3. And in this case, I'm not extremizing anything, and so what I end up with here is a finite quantity. I get the length of the curve over 4G, or the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy of this red curve. And so that says that the differential entropy here actually is bigger than some positive number, rather than just bigger than zero. Now, what's the clever thing that Vijay and his friends did? Well, they thought about a particular continuum limit, in quotes. What they did is they kept the length of the intervals finite, but then took an infinite number of them, densely packing the boundary with those intervals. And in that particular case, this outer envelope becomes a smooth circle of some fixed radius. The real surprise was that in this particular case, the differential entropy that you build up, in fact, saturates that inequality. And so what I get here is precisely the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy of this circle. So we're recovering that gravitational entropy in terms of this thing in the boundary theory that I'm calling the differential entropy. In fact, they went on to embellish that construction by allowing the sizes of the intervals to change as you move around the boundary in a continuous way. You could build up the outer envelope to the outer envelope was again a smooth curve, but you could build up some wobbly curve that had all sorts of structure. Again, the interesting thing was that in this continuum limit, this inequality was saturated, and so the differential entropy on the boundary theory was giving you precisely the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy in the bulk. So armed with that perspective, it's straightforward to think about this problem now in higher dimensions. And so this is just a first step in that direction. What I'm going to do is I'm going to think about a higher dimensional boundary, but I'm going to tile it with strips or intervals. And so it could be this room. We're just slicing it up with walls, which overlap. They have a finite width, and there's various overlaps, as I've drawn here. In the bulk, there's various extremal surfaces describing the entropy of the various intervals, and then other extremal surfaces associated with the intersections. The outer envelope is this red curve, or this red surface now down at the bottom, and we're going to evaluate the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy on that particular surface. Now, again, it's straightforward just to apply this construction, take this continuum limit, and the remarkable thing is that once again, this geometric inequality is saturated, so that what I'm seeing in this higher dimensional example is, again, the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy for some smooth curve in the bulk is equal to the differential entropy in the boundary. Of course, I want to emphasize this is the simplest possible thing I could do in higher dimensions. These curves can wave up and down, but there is this planar symmetry. It's not a function of more than one direction. It's just a, it can go up and down, but it's just a function of this one direction, x, that runs orthogonal to all of the strips.
And here we
So far, we're in empty ADFs, yeah. And I have lots of time, so I can talk about causal holographic information. So this, so far I haven't described any of the details of any of the calculations. And so you might be thinking, well, this will work for any old loops in ADS space. And so here's another clever set of loops, namely the ones associated with causal holographic information. Here we look at the causal development of some interval in the boundary, and then we send light sheets out into the bulk, and that defines something that's known as the bulk causal wedge. The causal, or there's an extremal surface there, and so the causal holographic information is just the area of that extremal surface over 4G. This, I didn't really emphasize it, but there was this story about observers and finite times in Vijay's original version of this discussion. And so this might have been thought to be the natural way to extend that discussion to higher dimensions. However, unfortunately, when we just apply the standard, differential form that we had for the entanglement entropies to this causal holographic information, in this particular case, we don't find that there's some kind of nice inequality that's now saturated. In fact, what you find is that there's a quantity over here that depends on the cutoff. And so if that cutoff goes to zero, this particular quantity is going to diverge. And that's simple to understand. It's because there's a leading area law divergence that's common to this and common to the entanglement entropy for a given interval. But the subleading divergences in the causal holographic information are non-local. And so they care about the entire interval or the entire region that we're studying here. And so when we take the various differences in this expression here, those subleading divergences don't cancel. That contrasts with the extremal surface that tells us about the entanglement entropy. In that particular case, there's the area law, and then all of the subleading divergences also have a local interpretation on the various, on the entangling surface, defining the various regions. And so in that difference, those local contributions all cancel out. So that's one place where it doesn't work. But then there's a list of places where, in fact, this does work. One of my favorite things is to think about higher curvature gravity. And so there's a simple example known as Gauss-Bonnet gravity. That's a case where you're introducing R squared in the action, and it turns out you have to add a curvature correction to the gravitational entropy formula. But basically, all you do is you substitute this expression for the Bekenstein-Hawking formula here, and then that's the extension that gives you the entanglement entropy in the boundary theory. Again, what you find going through this procedure is that the differential entropy, where these entanglement entropies are defined this way, now give us the appropriate gravitational entropy evaluated on our bulk surface. Yeah?
Sorry, I'm a little lost. So you have this successful generalization to higher dimensions.
Yeah.
Then you started talking about boundary to causal patches.
Right.
Where we know that they don't have to be
directly. Right. Right, so I just tried this, well, for various reasons, it doesn't work. Now I'm going back to entanglement entropies. This is an example where that, this is just an extension of the Ru Takunagi, but we're playing the same game now for a slightly different theory of gravity in the bulk.
Are you still trying to find the area of both surfaces?
Yeah. So, and what I find is the same thing happens, okay, you said area, so the thing I'm evaluating now is not quite the area, but this expression, which is natural to associate with the gravitational entropy of a black hole horizon or any other surface. And so this is our differential entropy in the boundary theory, and this is our gravitational entropy evaluated on this bulk surface.